finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football show. The usual lads are here with me, Stevie and Conan, on a Thursday. I want to start off with Graham Garrity and a bit of appreciation. He hasn't retired. He retired a whole load of times, as we know, and came back a whole load of times. But he was on Lake Regale last night, and it was good. I love Graham Garrity. It was good, but it wasn't brilliant. I was a little bit disappointed with it. I don't know why. Don't think Graham's a brilliant best talker in the world. Didn't really bring the moments to life or anything like that. So I thought it was a little bit underwhelming, but I loved him as a player. He was my idol as a player. I tried to model my game on him as a player, followed every position he went to. I followed him. I was nowhere near as good, but like, I mean, he was just a brilliant, brilliant natural talent.
Yeah, he's superb talent. And you know, I suppose the feedback on Twitter last night in relation to the show, you know, proves how much of a quality player he was. He's a superb player. I didn't get to see it yet, but I will make it my business over the next couple of days to watch the programme. But you know, Graham Garrity's highlights can hardly be put out over a half an hour show. He's had that many highlights.
It's an hour now. It's an hour. It's probably a half hour when you did it. Yeah. It's an hour this year.
Okay, so even an hour, you know, for what that man has achieved in the game, he's a spectacular player. Yeah. And a player, you know, who goes way back as far as the early 90s. And, you know, he had a very, very long career. Yes, he retired a number of times, but he kept coming back. But he was a remarkable player, and a player who could play, who started his inter-county career in a half-back line and moved gradually up the field. But he was a serious competitor. And luckily and thankfully, I got to play alongside him and to get an insight into how he trained and how he competed as well back in 2006 with the international rules. And you could see even at that stage he was maybe in his mid-30s, and he still kept himself in remarkably good shape. And he was a brilliant, brilliant player, and one of the main reasons why Meath had a stranglehold on the All-Ireland series throughout the 90s.
Yeah, because of him. And like, I mean, it's that just natural ability, and he's brilliant at everything. He was brilliant at soccer and had trials, and he's brilliant at rugby and ended up playing League of Ireland and rugby. Like, this is just a fella that could pretty much do anything, kind of at his ease as well.
He looks good on the sideline too, you know, those college teams. He just looks like an imposing figure. Like, you know, knows what he's talking about. But, and you can make all the jokes you want about him, like, you know, coming out of retirement and stuff, but there doesn't seem, there never seemed to be a time when he wasn't playing. Like, and when you're talking about he was your idol, like people like me then growing up, like 10 years later, they were our idols as well. Garrity was our idol. Like, you know, it's amazing just the amount of sort of generations in one career that he's touched, like, and so many people appreciate what he's done.
There's no doubt. I was wondering about the Lake Regale, Stevie. How long does it take to film, or what's the kind of schedule? I don't think I'll ever get to experience it, so
I might as well hear
from you.
For me, it was a half an hour show. And they actually call you almost a year in advance of putting it out. I think the filming takes, for me personally, it took almost a full day. So it did. But then I suppose filming, you know, the wee inserts from other people that's maybe playing a part in the particular show takes a few more days as well.
And the producers choose them, or do you have any input in who might be good? Well, you know,
the producers generally would choose them. They would tell you who they would be inviting onto it. From my show, I think it was Joe Kiernan Ricey was on it. I think Daryl Canadian was on it as well. So, you know, they'll tell you, I suppose, if there was somebody that you didn't particularly want to have on it, you could probably put your word for it. But no, I had no problems with who it was anyway.
Yeah, but no, it is interesting. That's a full day, really, and just they'll go through every game and they'll take clips from each one. And, like, I mean, you literally have to go through every year of your career, I presume, and answer questions on every game in that every year.
Almost. And in advance of I suppose, the day of filming, you would send them a brief synopsis on your career as well, and they would do a bit of research on that too. So they would know the questions, and they would probably forward, from my memory, they would have forwarded the questions that they would have been talking about as well, and probably speaking about your early days, your reasons for playing Gaelic games, and who was your mentors from a young age, and your inspiration from a young age as well.
Yeah, you're a bit like Johnny Giles in that regard. You remember all your matches almost encyclopedic memory of every
game. I remember quite a bit, yeah. I actually, for some reason I remember quite a few of my scores as well.
Why wouldn't you? You watched enough replays, videos of them.
But I can almost go through from my championship debut every score in every game that I played in.
Are you serious? That's a good few.
I
can do that with mine as well.
but I do miss quite a few things as well. You know, I think there was a video came out last year of me, and there was a few highlights in it, and things that maybe, geez, I forgot all about that there one. You know what I mean? But I do remember quite a bit of my own career. Yeah.
Did you have any hand in picking the clips for Laker Gael? Were you not like, here, hang on, this one's pretty tasty?
No. I wasn't.
That would be a huge help if they called you in a day. Like, I mean, because you'll remember scores that just won't be on, you know, or a researcher won't be able to find, you know. You'd be able to give them a really good heads up, I'd imagine, of
what they actually do is they have a launch night, and you can choose your venue, whatever. I chose the local pub and restaurant, so they do invite people and friends along to it as well, and for that 30 minutes they put the show out live, you know, and let everyone watch it. It's before it is actually aired on TV, I think maybe 2 or 3 days before it's aired on TV. So that's the first time I got to see it as well, which was alongside many of my friends and family.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. Gareth, he's actually had some kind of career in that. He was in a movie. Did you know that?
He was in a movie.
Yeah, he's in some low budget.
He was in politics as well, was he?
In politics. He was in all that controversy over in Australia.
Yeah.
He was on the Late Late Show explaining rumours that was going on about himself and his wife and everything at the time, which were terrible. Loads of controversies on the field. Like, I mean, he'd such a checkered career combined with such a successful career. It's unreal. Like, he was around for so long. And his career crossed over from amateur into professional, and, you know, he just adapted with it, you know. Yeah. And I think a lot of the best football he played was towards the end of his career. He was outstanding at full forward, and even I remember him playing against Tyrone when they beat Tyrone. He was back lashing him over. Not Tyrone in 96 now. It was Tyrone in 2007 or something.
He actually flicked it over the goalkeeper.
He was outstanding that day.
Hang on, what was his movie?
I can't remember the name of it, but it was really low budget. He didn't really explain too much. He had a moustache and he was fighting somebody in like some sort of a cave.
He was fighting somebody.
You'd be very surprised to hear.
But he formed a fantastic partnership.
I thought he acted pretty well, actually.
Back in the late 90s, you know, we formed a great partnership with Ollie Murphy, if you remember.
Yeah. And they showed clips of that last night, too.
Goal against Louth when Murphy carries the ball for about 100 metres and then comes across the byline and just puts it on.
Was it panned in? Was it?
Hang on, I think he catches it and drills it.
It was a goal in the All-Ireland final against Cork in the first half when they're under pressure, and Geraghty just fists it down, and Ollie, like the predator he is, just picks up the break and sticks it in the net. And then Geraghty actually said last night he wasn't in it in the first half, but doing that one kind of thing just gave him that little spark. He got three from playing the second half. It was outstanding. But in 1999, you weren't playing against Meath when they beat you guys, I think it was 15-2-5 in the semi-final. You maybe weren't quite ready for that.
I was on the sideline.
You were on the bench.
Yeah.
But your fullback got sent off. Reid got sent off marking him.
Yeah,
it was two kind of lunges and got.
I think the second one from memory was a kind of a pullback, what you would get a black card for nowadays, I think, something like that there. But it certainly put an end to our, I suppose, fight. We went in a half time in that game in the lead. Two fantastic goals, one from Jamard Marsh and one from Kieran Hughes in the first half. And had, you know, momentum and the upper hand for a team that had actually just gone to the All-Ireland semi-final for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, we created quite a few opportunities in front of goals, and Oisin had one of his very rare off days. You know, I think his father was gravely ill at that stage, so he was, so obviously that was playing on his mind. But you know, the difference in the winning and losing of that game was certainly Graeme Geraghty, Ollie Murphy and Trevor Giles pulling the strings for them, you know. And then you had an imposing figure in John McDermott playing midfield. What a player he was. So they were a brilliant team. But you know, that one game, actually, while Meath beat us by a few points, it probably gave us a lot of belief as a team as well, because it made us realise, right, we've won our first Ulster, but we're not a million miles away here.
Yeah. McGeaney told a story quickly at a roadshow that he said during his career, because Meade were kind of the kingpins of being tough, hard men, that there was challenge games on a yearly basis against Meade, and he said he always ended up being a row in it, and he always ended up fighting Geraghty because they would have ran it themselves.
Constant rows, and I'll give you a story here. My first ever start for the Armagh senior team was against Meade in one of those challenge games, up in Navan.
Who were you marking?
Cormac Murphy.
Oh yeah.
And I swear to God, I was about 11 and a half stone going in on Cormac Murphy, and the first thing that he done in the challenge game was put the studs right down the back of my Achilles. I said, so this is what it's all about then, okay, right? And he was making a statement there, but it was something that I had to learn fairly fast, get used to this or walk away from the game. But it was those type of games that certainly put a lot of steel into that Armagh team. But Meath were well known for it at that time, and they were the type of challenge games that really, I suppose, stood you well come championship.
I kind of miss that. It's kind of like now you'll get a challenge game against a defensive team to get used to that. Back then you'd get a challenge game against a team that's known to kick the shit out of you,
kick the shit out of you. But what they also done was
that's what Dublin did with Armagh 2 or 3 years ago, that big row was in as well. Didn't they have that? Maybe you're the new Meade now to go up there and have a bit of a row with.
So we'll not put that out though. Armagh like to get physical. Armagh like to play in physical games. They don't like to get physical.
Lads, I want to talk to you about cruciate injuries, because obviously Bernard Brogan is in the news this week, and he's after having his operation, so he's hoping that he'll be back in 6 months, and let's all hope that he'll be back in 6 months. He'll be back for an All-Ireland semi-final if he could get back right. Wouldn't it be lovely to see him come on and influence the game like he did last year? And let's make no mistake, he did influence the game last year, so that's his incentive now. And he's lucky that he's with a brilliant team like Dublin, who he pretty much is 90% sure they'll be at the business end in the All-Ireland semi-final. So he has that incentive to get back. Because I don't know, lads, if I'm 34 and I get that injury, I'm kind of saying he's got his own business. He's a lot of things going on. Yeah. He'd be well in his entitled to say, I'm done. I've had a great innings. I've had 5 All-Irelands. But he doesn't. And I think it's a huge credit to him as a competitor to want to get back into the mix at that age. At 34, and we know what Jim Gavin's like. Dear McConnelly didn't get back in for either semi-final or final last year, only off the bench, and he is younger than Bernard, and he wasn't out for 6 months with an injury. He was actually training away. So I think Bernard deserves an awful lot of credit here.
Absolutely. Listen, he's had a fantastic career to date. He's got 5 All-Ireland medals, but I think the drive for 5 is probably a bit of motivation for Bernard as well. He wants to be involved in potentially a Dublin team that can go and win 5 All-Irelands in a row.
Yeah.
You know, and
they'll win 4. Kerry will beat them next year for the 5. Remember Tip beat Kilkenny.
Is that not part of Galway's 3-year plan?
Galway, we can't
forget about that.
Galway will beat them.
Going back to Bernard, what a player he's been down through the years. And like Graeme Geraghty, we were speaking about him. Bernard got better with age as well, and in his late 20s he started to become one of the main forwards in the country, and if not the main forward in the country. And while it's such a hammer blow for him to pick up a bad injury at this stage of his career and at this stage of the season as well, I think there is plenty of motivation for him there personally to get himself back into the mix for a potential All-Ireland semi-final stage.
I want to talk about these cruciates though, lads, and why they're so common now. And in 2011 there was a report came out and it kind of had broken down how many injuries. I know it's on the financial statements, different injuries, but this was actually broken down. Knee injuries are by far the most common injury, but a report in 2011 broke the knee injuries out to see how many cruciate. I couldn't find that myself in 2017, but there was shoulder injuries were the most, knee injuries were the most common. Then followed by shoulder of 525 shoulder injuries, which you can understand, it's a shoulder to shoulder game, physical game, but 470 cruciate injuries came next. This is back in 2011, and the GAA paid out 8 million in insurance claims on cruciate ligament injuries alone. Now, a lot of people are wondering, why is this happening? And sometimes studs are blamed. I can't see how studs are any issues. Back in 20 years ago, they wore the big long metal ones. You'd imagine that would jar your knee an awful lot more than what a blade which to slip or mouldies would slip out. Can't see how it's that. I can't see how it's pitches, because they'll always be the same. What I think, it's very obvious to me what it is, and that is the lack of recovery. It's fatigue. And Raymond Verheyen has been quoted on this, and he says it takes 48 hours for a player to recover after a game. That's a properly fit player. Do our lads get 48 hours to recover? Now, that's recovering, like Stephen Hunt said famously on The Independent, that caused so much hassle. That's sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
That's watching telly. Yeah. That's having a bath. That's having a jacuzzi. That's getting a massage. And that's properly professional. That's not getting into a car to go to work or travel to work and then travel again to go to a recovery session that evening. That's 48 hours. If you're not really fit, it takes you 72 hours. Now, he says the main reason why the ACL happens is that the knee is temporarily unprotected when the player turns or leans. Normally, your muscles contract to stabilise the knee and nothing happens. So you all talk about building up your muscle around your knee and that's how you'll protect it. Even some people don't get the operation. They actually just go back, focus on building up around their knee. But he continues on. He says, over the holiday period, now this is soccer he's talking about because he's a very respected fitness expert in the soccer area. So over the holiday period, which is the Christmas period in soccer, which is the busiest, you know, they're playing so many games in a couple of weeks. Now, these are professionals that actually get to rest in between these games. So over the holiday or Christmas period, when players play so many games and have accumulated fatigue, their nervous system slows down and the signal from the brain to the muscle gets slower. Then when they make explosive movements, the signal arrives a millisecond too late. The player leans or turns with an unprotected knee and the ACL just snaps.
Yep.
Like, I mean, because you hear about all these innocuous injuries. Like, Bernard Brogan was just running to kick a pint and his knee just went. Like, I mean, Bernard Brogan, we know, put in a big effort this Christmas to get back right, to, you know, get a... Like, was he doing a bit on his own? Was he fatigued? Is this lack of recovery? I would say
lack of recovery, and also a case of, you can put in the same bracket, overload as well.
Yeah.
You know,
overtraining and lack of recovery.
Yeah,
but this is just a new phenomenon, lads, isn't it? Like, I mean, we didn't hear in the '90s. We didn't hear of cruciate injuries to this extent.
Probably not as much in the '90s, but you know, our game is getting more exposure now, and there's more media attention towards.
But
our
we're
game.
Also going to the gym on the nights off, so you never really get to recover your body.
But I remember one particular season. I think it might have been 2005 or 2006 with Armagh. We had 3 or 4 cruciates in the 1 year, and what our management team had to do was look at the type of training and how frequent we were training as well, to try to change the fact that so many players were having such impact injuries like that there. And I think there's a responsibility as well on management and coaches to make sure that, you know, there is enough time for recovery for players, that players aren't being asked to, you know, work themselves to the pin of their collar in terms of you know, the doubt that might cast over them in terms of picking up injuries like Bernard Brogan has. And that's not saying that Dublin's schedule is too demanding.
Yeah, you're not
whatever.
Blaming Dublin. Like, no. I mean, this is across the board. They're all
it's
trying,
across
like,
the board. Yeah,
this is happening in every county at alarming levels. 39 a month.
Exactly. Yeah, but at the same time, Bernard Brogan has to get up every morning, go to his job. You know, he runs his own business. He has to get up and do that every morning, and he's not getting the proper recovery. And that's on the back of probably going through a 90-minute grueling session as well. So
yeah, like, well, Bernard could just be a freak sometimes as well. But now the numbers don't stack up to freaks. You're right. I think it is recovery, and it's funny you mentioned about that brain signal and stuff going down. Because I did sports science in school and college, and my dissertation was on the effect of fatigue on technical performance. So it was just showing that the more tired you get, the less or the more likely you are to miss a shot or a shot that you would normally get. So something like that, then I can absolutely see that your technique would go off. You're not thinking about what way you're stepping. And it is funny because the more injuries we're getting, the more and more we're becoming aware of it, and we're doing more warm-ups, we're doing stretches to try and prevent all this stuff, and it's still not helping. Like, and the gym point you make is bang on as well, because and off days you're doing even more work than you probably are on the pitch.
Yeah.
And then it's the nutrition and the drinking and all this as well.
I'd love to see the correlation or a report come out, and the spike in cruciate injuries coincide with the maybe 2001, 2002, 2003 kind of gym culture coming into the GAA. And I would imagine, like, this is just from my own kind of head, there's nothing, no kind of research gone into this.
Go for it.
I have 2 podcasts and 2 interviews to do today. But, like, I'd say the correlation between that spike in cruciates and that higher training level is absolutely consistent.
It's hard to know. It's going back to a point you made there, when a player is fatigued, you know, I know from my point of view, if I was getting fatigued towards the end of a training session and I was able to kick a ball over the bar from 40 yards, I was thinking to myself, right, I can do it now and I'm really drained, so I can do it in a match.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe you're putting yourself under that extra wee bit of pressure at that particular stage.
Yeah.
You
know, it's hard to know because, like, I mean, yeah, but the idea that your brain sends the signal that second too late, because, like, I mean, you see lads doing their cruciates and, like, they're not turning sharply.
Well,
they're just running.
Yeah, but a lot of them is impact from a jump onto the ground as well, and how they jar their knee as well.
Yeah,
you know,
that'll be jarring it. But, like, I mean, these ligaments are going without huge amount. Like, I don't know. See a lot of medial ligaments, and you can kind of see the knee hyperextend, and you're like, right, well, that's medial. You can see how that happened. I've done my medial ligament. But these cruciates, like, I mean, it's such a long, long road back.
It's a long road
back.
For
such an innocuous thing. And I honestly, because of these payouts, in 2011, it was 8 million. I was looking at last year's financial statements, and it was like payouts and expenses. So it wasn't broken out exactly. It was around 8 million as well. And it's like, how are the GEA not doing something about this? Because the one thing they understand is that 8 million. Like, if you want to save on that 8 million, let's stop these from happening. And if it is over, if it is overtraining or fatigue, well, I'm surprised there aren't bans put in the overtraining, because, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, how do you stop overtraining, or how do you pull that back? I don't know, because players do want to do it and managers want them to do it. But absolutely, the recovery, I can't stress enough that these lads are not getting recovery enough recovery. Mm-hmm. They're not. They're amateur players. They can't possibly recover from the impact. Remember your bodies, lads, after an intercounty league or championship game. The league, but the league games are nearly as bad as championship, because the league's played in really soft ground. So, like, I mean, my legs would be like your legs are just pulled out of you. Like, I mean, I wouldn't feel right until the Wednesday.
Yeah,
but you
also remember the tough running sessions that you've done in training, and you're told, okay, two more runs, and you get through the two more runs. And then you think, I'm never going to get through these two runs.
Yeah,
but then 5 minutes later, you're ready for another 10. You know what I mean?
So I hate those two more run boys, though, who suddenly come to life when they know there's only two more runs.
Well, a good manager.
I had it last week. I went to circuit training last week in the Newry Sports Centre, right? And we done three circuits, but maybe 8 or 9 different stations. And I was bucked all together. It was the first time I'd done circuit training in years, and coming up to the last two stations, the fitness coach says, two more stations left, and I thought, oh yeah, thank God, get through this. What did he do after it? A bleep test. I was ruined.
completely unfair, there's no doubt. Right, but one or two more things to get through here, lads, is Martin Farragher. He has had his appeal accepted. So he's okay for the All-Ireland final. Everyone will be delighted to hear that. He's an excellent player, and he did nothing wrong. Whether the referee, Derek O'Mahony, gets looked over for a few games now or not is the next thing, because that's what he deserves for doing that to a player in such a big game. It was a horrible mistake. If a player made it, he'd be dropped.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? You know, the referee, is he going to be held accountable for such an absolutely awful clanger that could have lost the game for Cora Finn, could have ruined Martin Farragher's year? And I don't think he should be just left go. Maybe he should be up for the suspension himself. Anyways, we won't spend too long on that. Just quickly, lads, because we have gone way over time on that, is maybe I'm being paranoid here on this, lads, but I just said I'd throw it out there anyway. So Ned Quinn, do you know who Ned Quinn is outside of the notes that I've just given you?
Well, that'd be enough for you.
So Ned Quinn is the... Tell me I'm being paranoid here anyways, if I am. So Ned Quinn is the Kilkenny County Board Chairman, former. Now, he's been County Board Chairman on a couple of different occasions, from 1999 to 2007, and from 2013 to 2017. Now, he's just been appointed as Chairman to the high-powered Central Committee's Control, Central Competitions Control Committee, the CCCC, the famous CCCC. So it's one of the biggest jobs in the GEA. Who appointed him was John Horan, the new president, who appointed a whole load of different new chairmen. Our Dick Clerken got a great little number there, actually, as well. Maybe just brown nosing the GEA in every single piece that you write actually works in your favour for some things. But anyways, I won't go bogged down in that. Anyways, which I was trying to think, because I was always wondering about John Horan and Kilkenny, because I obviously have a lot of history about campaigning against the mad decision to take our home game against Dublin in Amore Park out of our own home ground and give it to Kilkenny, a bloody county that doesn't give a shit about football. And we've gone into that way too much. Obviously, O'Moore Park then against Dublin and Carlow is perfectly fine to play that game. But Kilkenny get that huge game. And I was wondering, why would John Horan... John Horan was a huge backer of this. He was Leinster Council chairman at the time, and I remember having a huge debate with him on Off the Ball, saying it was wrong, etc. And then I was like, what would the connection between John Horan and Kilkenny be? You know what I mean? There must be something there. Why did give that game to Kilkenny? What have Kilkenny got on John Horan? And now he's given the chairman the best job in the whole of the GAA. So what I'd like to know is what dirt Ned Quinn has on John Horan. Now, okay, now you can tell me if I'm being paranoid or not.
I think you are being a wee bit paranoid.
4 days and he's turned on John Horan already.
I actually have not turned on John Horan.
If you're planning on going back to play, you might need Ned Quinn on your side.
I like John Horan. I'm holding out. I think John Horan will be a good president. I hope he's going to be a good president, because like I said, I've had debates with him, but I think he's reasonable, and I don't think he's the real old school like O'Farrell was, where everything's rosy in the garden, and at least he's accepted already that there are some issues. Maybe they're not the issues I wanted him to accept, but you know, the development squads and payments to managers, a few different things like that. At least he's like O'Farrell, who buried his head in the sand for 3 years and thought everything was brilliant. John Horan at least accepted that they weren't, but maybe we'll get him on and ask him how he knows old Neddy. Maybe, you see, they could be brother-in-laws or anything, we don't know. I think somebody, again, of two podcasts and two interviews, I couldn't actually research the relationship.
But the reality is that Ned Quinn could well just be the best person for that job.
He could be the best person for the job, absolutely. He could be an excellent chairman. It's on the back of him getting that. Ned Quinn is just brilliant. It's no surprise that if he was able to get that Dublin leash game into Kilkenny, maybe this Ned Quinn should have been the new president. Maybe it shouldn't be John Horan at all. Right, lads, we may start talking about some football next, but before that, it's Colm Collin.
Conan Doherty, who's a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them. Yeah.
Alright, delighted to say Colm Collins is on the line now, who's heading into his fifth year in charge of the Clare Footballers. You have Mickey Hart in your sights at this stage, Colm.
No, we won't get anywhere near that. That's for sure. I think I've my job done now at this stage.
You took a while out after the Mayo game last year. You had a great performance down in Ennis, and you took a little bit of time to think about it.
Yeah, well, I took the time out to consult with the players. Really, Colm, that was it. I wanted to, you know, to give them the opportunity if they needed a change to say so. So that's really what that was about. So, you know, they said they'd like us to continue for another year, so we said we would. That was that.
All right, so I suppose that's being pretty self-aware to at least ask the players, because I suppose going into after 4 years, you'd almost start thinking to yourself, are you repeating yourself maybe?
Yeah, I think this, as you know, you're not that far removed from being a player. I listen to the same voice all the time. You know, that it's something that you got to think about, and I'd be very, you know, if the players felt that there was a change needed, I'd have no problem stepping down. No, last year I had no problem stepping down either.
Right. Okay. Well, it's good to see you back anyway. So the players obviously gave you the positive response that you needed.
I got the vote last year. All right. Whether or not.
You might be like Davy Fitz having to head off to Wexford after a bad vote, maybe. That might.
No. My next job is to crack on the rates, Colm. That's my next job.
Well, listen, I think that's what the GA is all about, Colm. But listen, come here, you've made a couple of little changes to your backroom team. Enda Coughlin is in there as well, and you have Keith Hennessy in as strength and conditioning. So you have those two changes have happened, whether it has been enforced or whether it has been by choice.
No. Keith left, Colm.
Oh, you replaced him with Rob Mulcahy.
Rob Mulcahy, that was it. Yeah. So Keith left, and he'd done a really good job, and I'd like to thank him again for the job he did. And so we got Rob Mulcahy then was recommended to me, and he's done a fantastic job. We're delighted with him. Inda has been, he played with us, as you know, up to a couple of years ago. So we're delighted to have him on board. He's very sharp to read a game and knows what's going on, and we're delighted to have him with us as well.
A bit of good news for you is that Alan Flynn, your coach, has stayed for 2 years in a row, which is an unusual thing for your coaches.
Yeah, I find it hard to hang on to coaches. You've spotted that.
I have spotted that. So will we go through the list? So Paddy Cassan, Effie Fitzgerald, Mick Bohan and Alan Flynn. So you went through four coaches in 4 years. So I'm not sure how, maybe you're a bit of a tough drill sergeant.
I must be very hard to get on with.
Well, you've softened anyway.
To be fair to every one of them, they all made a great contribution, and I think this, without exception, they all brought something to the party, and we were delighted to have such a high quality of coach. And Alan is doing a fantastic job now, and he's continuing that in that vein. Like,
you made a comment I was reading where it's really difficult to get really good coaches within the GEA, and I thought it was very interesting, because I would be of the same opinion. Like, where do you find these young coaches? Or, you know, they don't come out of a school, or they don't come out of anywhere where you go, well, here's a new batch. I'd say a lot of research has to go into actually find a good coach.
I think it's pretty much like everything. I think the first thing you need to have is a real passion for the job. I think this, you know, going doing courses or whatever, and that doesn't really qualify you to coach at inter-county level, or, you know, maybe any level. I think that you have to have a real passion for the job, and you really have to love what you're doing. And I think that's the most important thing. And I think it's accurate enough. I think that, you know, that if you're asked to name out, you know, I think the people, that the audience are the players. And if you ask players all over the country, you know, to name, you know, to ask any of them to name three or four big the guys they consider top best coaches, I'd say they'd be pulling up after two, you know.
Yeah.
So of, you know, what they've come across in their own life, in their own football lives. So I think it's about passion. It's about loving what you're doing. That's what it is. And I think it's the people that I've come across that really love what they're doing are the best coaches.
And do you find it absolutely vital to have a coach rather than doing, like, I'm sure some managers do it themselves. I know, like, Jim McGuinness would have done it themselves, but I'm thinking if you're stuck in doing drills all the time, you're not really getting that kind of overlook of everything or able to watch fellas, because you can get too involved in these drills as well.
Yeah, sometimes you can be a bit too close. I think the way an inter-county scene is going, I think it's very important to surround yourself with really good people and then allow people to do their job. We've been extremely lucky in Clare. You know, everybody that's involved in the setup have been fantastic. And, you know, you know every part of it, everybody's doing their job really well. And there's no need to be looking over your shoulder. And then all you've got to do is put the thing together. I think it's important that you're able to look back and have a nice overview of things and see what way things are going and put your time into that. But, like, we all complement each other. I would like to think that we all kind of help each other out in every aspect of preparation.
Yeah, maybe. I think that's the way it's going. Division 2 has been unbelievably competitive this year, Colm. You obviously stayed up, consolidated last year. You're sitting on 4 points. Like, I mean, a win the next day and you could find yourself in second place. Like, I mean, it's a real, real close division. We kind of knew that before it even started. But, like, I mean, while you must be worried about being relegated, you can also be optimistic about potentially getting promoted.
Yeah, I think that, as you said, anybody that follows football closely would have said at the start that this was going to be a really interesting division. And I felt from the very start that there would be points going in all directions. And I felt that, you know, we've approached this last year as just doing one game at a time and see what we can get out of each game. And then we didn't change this year. We're going, you know, just there's only one game on our radar now, and that's just Common on Sunday. And we're going to try and get the best we can out of that and get a really good performance out of the lads. And I'm quite sure that on Sunday evening there's going to be shocks all over that division. It's
yeah.
It's very hard to kind of draw a line and say, yeah, I know exactly what's going to happen here. They're going, these are going to win, because it hasn't happened like that. But I think all you got to do is do your best every day you go out, and see where that takes you. And don't get involved in talking about promotion or relegation until the last game. That's the only day I think you can comfortably talk about it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I'd say your players absolutely love this time of the year, Division 2, you know, going to places like Down, Meath, although you might not have had the best memories. But, like, I mean, being in that division, the higher standard and matches coming thick and fast, like, it's just the perfect... Unfortunately, it's played, in my opinion, at a bad time of the year and bad weather, but, like, it's a brilliant, brilliant competition.
It is, and it's great to be playing teams like that. You know, this, I think in the 4 or 5 years, I think there's only a handful, 4 or 5 teams that we haven't played, and it's great because, you know, when you're stuck in one division, you're playing the same teams all the time, and it's nice to play against teams like Down and so on and so forth, which you normally wouldn't have been playing against.
Yeah.
And I do think it's a great competition. I think that players love us. And, okay, well, sometimes the weather can be you know, terrible at this time of the year. But at the same time, I think it's very competitive. And I think this, as I said, the Arctic is who the players love us, and I think they do.
The big win against Down the last day, which was like a outstanding win, to go up there and beat them away. You did it without Jamie Malone and Gordon Kelly. We know Gordon Kelly is going up for a hearing tonight. So, like, I mean, you're still feeling aggrieved about those sendings off. I saw you describe it as insane recently.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just think that the whole thing has gone mad altogether. I think this, you know, like from the Michael Farrer incident to, like, that at the very worst, and you know, Gordon swears that he just cleaned out the bottle. And, like, to put it in context, the umpires were involved in no decision that was any way controversial. Nothing.
Right.
There was no issue with any umpire. Everything, the only issue was with the linesman. That was it. The linesman and the referee that were involved in the decision that knocked the game. No issue with the umpire. So the coming off the pitch, now, Gordon claims it was a complete accident, whatever, and even if it did hit him. Now, to give a guy with a brilliant disciplinary record over the last, players were clear for the last 14, 15 years, 3 months, which prevents him from playing club football as well, I think it's absolutely mad. I just think it's mad. And, you know, I think that the whole thing has just gone too far one way.
Yeah, so three months means he'll miss all the rest of the league, and he'll be back just before the Limerick game in the championship.
Four championship, yeah.
For a drop of water.
As you know, we have in Clare, there will be six games of the senior league over before he's eligible to play again. So he'll only play, is it one game in the senior league in Clare? And I think that's absolute. Now, I would be all for protecting officials if there was any physical interference of any sort. Fair enough, but this is absolute. This is a joke.
Yeah.
Joke.
Where did the water hit him?
There's the question. Gordon disputes that it hit him anywhere.
Right.
If it hit him, I don't know. Actually, to be honest, it didn't. It was on his coat probably, or something like that. But it wasn't in his face or anything like. It wasn't. I heard that you were up to tricks with water, squirting in people's faces and stuff like that. There's none of that going on, I can tell you.
Yeah, well, that's what I was talking about, is carry on going on the field.
No.
I used to do mess with that. But I suppose where it hit him would make the case either stronger or weaker, that if it hit him up around the face, you'd imagine it would be
no.
hard to describe.
Well, I can tell you for certain it didn't do that.
Right.
No, I know that much.
Okay.
Gordon's even disputing that it actually is within his direction. He's disputing that it even hit him. I think that while we're an amateur organisation, I think we should be looking at ways of keeping people on the pitch rather than getting people or sending people off.
Yeah.
Now, you know, while nobody would condone if somebody's having a tug fair enough. But like, you know, you've got so many of these happening where, like the whole black card rule, for example, right? The black card is the most brilliant rule that ever came in until referees got their hands on it.
Yeah.
And suddenly, instead of it being a clear cut, pull down a fella to stop something happening, or it being a clear cut, stop their run, or it being a clear cut case of abuse, you have a whole lot of these grey areas coming in. And, you know, all these have been disputed. It's just, I just think that we're going backwards in relation to these areas, you know.
Yeah, but anyway, referees maybe
that's
trying
not going to change.
No, referees trying to be a little bit too clever, maybe, definitely with the black card. But did Gordon Kelly say there was verbals or anything with the umpire before this? This was a complete random thing where an umpire...
Nothing. The umpire in that game, there was no issue with any of the four umpires.
It's bizarre,
isn't
it?
There was no controversial decision involving any umpire. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. One incident in the whole game involved the linesman and the referee. That was it. Stop.
Yeah.
It's
obviously going to be the umpire's word against Gordon's now, and interfering with an umpire. We saw Dear McConnelly get the 3 months last year, and obviously that crime didn't fit that punishment either, even though within the letter of the law that this is what these, a lot of these rules in the GEA are kind of black and white.
At least Dermot got to put his hand on him and he got some mileage out of it. lads, you know.
Yeah.
He got something for his trouble. It's ridiculous.
And the Jamie Malone thing, that's another suspension, and that's again, you tried to appeal that down and it was refused.
Well, as we were appealing at Congress for changing the rules.
Go away.
I think the way the rules stood.
Always right.
If you were an official or a mentor in the other team, it was profitable to you for you to get involved with an opposition player. I mean, if there's a star on the other team, all you have to do is bang into him and start doing a bit of pushing and shoving, and he gets sent off and you get nothing.
Yeah.
But anyway, listen, Jamie's back after Sunday, so you know that's it, that's done and dusted, and no more about it. So we'll get on with this. But
yeah,
I don't think this anything is going to change. I think this is just one area of our games that are, instead of improving, they're getting worse.
Yeah, well, it's definitely frustrating when the effort Gordon Kelly has put in for the year, if he goes for 3 months over a drop of water on probably a horrible, a really wet day, it just doesn't make any sense. But again, a lot of these things...
Well, the thing about him is that he's an excellent disciplinary record, and he's been an excellent servant for Clare in the sense that he has played day in, day out for 14, 15 years. So I think it's absolutely criminal, this is. But anyway, as I say, you know, I mean, if somebody was deliberately just, you know, trying to do that, and I know, like, listen, I there are probably people saying, that's not what happened. But it's what happened. He didn't. There was no issue with the umpire.
Yeah.
There was no reason to say anything to the umpire or square water the umpire. Nothing.
Yeah, Jesus.
But
it's definitely, we're hearing new ones every year, but that's a new one. That's definitely a new one to me. Even though you're right, I did dabble in the arts of the water bottle, the dark arts of the water bottle in my time.
The dark arts of the water bottle. Yeah.
Never with a referee or an umpire. But come here, I want to finish up with you about the Munster Championship, Colin, because you must be very frustrated trying to build a team like Clare, who's more than holding their own in Division 2, and you come down to the Munster Championship and you have the very same draw, if I'm not mistaken, this year as you did last year, and you're meeting Kerry again. So you obviously have to stay confident and try and say that you could maybe catch them on an off day if they're not playing 100%, but it almost doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, I think this is it the fourth year we've had the same kind of draw. Yeah, I think one year we met Cork, that was it.
Yeah.
I think, okay, you know, my own personal preference is that 8 groups of 4 play each other. You're graded according to where you finish in the group. Top 2 play the All-Ireland. Bottom 2 play a secondary championship, which is played on the final play the same day as the All-Ireland. They also get their All-Stars. They get their trip abroad, where the two teams play each other wherever they go. That's my, I think if that was introduced, I think that you would have suddenly have a meaningful championship. I think that, and then, on the other hand, if you've got a team, we'll say, you just take, for example, where your own County Laois this year in Division 4, and just supposing they come out and that they've got really good form this year, and they go into their group of four and they beat a couple of teams, and they can play in the All-Ireland. It's not because you're in Division 4 you want to be there. So that if you have your act together on the year in question, you can play in the top competition.
Yeah.
I think it would be fair. I think we're being held back by the dinosaurs that are the provincial championships. I think that the it's so unfair the way it's said. I mean, you take it from the northern point of view. You have in the north, you've got so many teams up there that are really competitive, and they're coming down. And in times, in older times, they were coming down to play a team that's, you know, basically was just sitting there waiting for them.
Yeah.
Because of the lack of competition in some other provinces at certain times. So I think that would even everything up, but there's a reluctance to grasp that nettle. And I think this, you know, this super race only flipping dancing around it. That's all it is, you know. It's,
yeah. Although having said that with the super eights, like, I mean, that must be an aim for yourselves, because like if you lose to Kerry, three qualifier wins and you're in that kind of holy grail of the super eight. So it's not an unattainable kind of level.
I'm not saying it is. Like, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, I'm not just talking about Clare here when I'm talking about this. I'm just talking about every team. I think it's important that everybody has an attainable goal, you know, in championship. And while the leagues are very attainable for everybody that are in, you know, in your division, the championship for a team that's maybe not going as well as they could be going, the All-Ireland is not attainable, whereas maybe a second-tier championship would be. But I think that all you have to do is give it pride of place and give it a proper, you know, same day as the All-Ireland, All-Stars, holiday, the whole lot.
Yeah,
I think that's the great point
is showing it the prestige that it deserves and have it on the same day. And the All-Stars is, I didn't actually think of the Division 2 All-Stars, all those things that go with it, and not just have it running as a Division 4 competition that nobody cares about, and it's almost embarrassing for teams to have to go into it. Like, I mean, that's not what players want. I definitely think you're onto something
You take it, John Heslin, to my mind, has got no All-Star, and John Heslin is probably one of the best forwards in the country.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not right. There's something wrong there.
Yeah.
There's something inherently wrong there. You know, so that I just think that if they were serious about it, I think that would be a massive way to go. Yeah. Massive way to go.
No, listen, that's definitely food for thought. Come here, Colin, we've gone way over time. You've been absolutely great with your time, and best of luck. I'd say another win maybe will probably do you. You've loud at home, not going to count your chickens, but at the same time,
I've work done here. The teams have been relegated on six. Teams have gone down on six. So
yeah, okay.
We're going.
No bother, Colin. Thanks very much. Talk to you again.
Take care. Bye now.
Good luck.
Bye.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just been in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me.
You're
looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Right, the big one obviously this week, lads, is Dublin and Kerry. It's in Croke Park on Sunday at 4 o'clock, and it is on live on Air Sport. Air Sport usually get the Saturday night games, but they've been given this Sunday game because it has been, you know, changed from the Saturday night. That's the big one across all the divisions, there's no doubt about that. It's Dublin Kerry, it's the glamour game. We've been very critical of Kerry. Well, I have been very critical of Kerry so far in the league, and maybe it needs to be pointed out that how many players they're actually missing, you know, like, I mean, the missing Tadhg Morley, they're missing David Moran, they're missing Donica Walsh, they're missing Kieran Donaghy, they're missing a lot of their leaders off that team, and it's a lot of young lads. And they were talking about Division 1 here, and like, they're not doing great, but at the same time there's mitigating circumstances for them as well. And like, another way of looking at it is Kerry are changing their team a little bit. Like, I mean, they're going with a very attacking half forward line, they're not getting as many men behind the ball as they used to. And like, Tomás O'Shea was of the opinion, I was reading, and I'm kind of on that line of thinking as well, is that Kerry are thinking long term, and they're thinking, how can we beat Dublin?
Possibly, and why wouldn't they? They've won three All-Irelands and Tartan at minor level, so why wouldn't they be trying to, you know, get those young fellas through and prepare for maybe the longevity of getting those boys into a successful Kerry team and being there for about 5 or 6 years? Because on the basis of what we see in Dublin, it looks like they're going to be around for quite a while yet. So, you know, Kerry have to match, I suppose, their approach in terms of planning long term, the same way that Dublin are.
Yeah, I just don't think long term though that they have the defenders to match Dublin. So I don't know if this is the best strategy to go. Like, because the reason that I've been critical of Kerry is that you've heard that these new players are coming now and it's going to help their team, but I haven't seen that the new players are as good as Mayo's back, say, for example. And you know, watched Bjuglik getting taken to the cleaners by Brannigan the other day for Galway. Like, you know, and just Jason Foley's doing all right, but it's like, is he the boy that's going to be able to stand man
for
man?
He'll be good.
Yeah, it looks decent, but it's like, there's a lot of space at Croke Park the way, say, Mayo play. And I think the way to beat Dublin is play the way Mayo play. So to do that, you have to have the best defenders, which Mayo do, I believe. And I just don't know if Kerry do, and if they will have them in 2 or 3 years' time. Like, you can see that's what they're doing. Their halfback line is very attacking now as well. It's just, like, they're basically reckless abandon, leaving everything at home and going for
it. And that's the thing, and they're all going man for man. And like, I mean, Tadhg Morley will come in, Killian Young maybe not, but Tadhg Morley's another fella who'll do a job, a man marking job. He's not the fella that's going to drop off and be the smart player. So unless, when David Moran comes back, he can do that role, because David Moran has a brilliant football brain. Now, I like David Moran going forward and distributing, but David Moran needs to take on that role of seeing the danger and dropping back into the centre half back position, and maybe he can do that, you know. So we won't know exactly until we see, because David Moran is that Keane O'Sullivan. There's certain players just almost like managers on the field. They know what they know, where to be and what to do.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how they actually play with the likes of David Moran, Donica Walsh, you know, real worker in the half forward line. How to play with those players, those experienced players beside him, putting Starr back in, you know, how Clifford and boys he got play around him as well. You know, it could be a totally different Kerry team that we see with the experienced players back in, and that blend of youth and experience could be the perfect mix for them.
And even Donaghy get back in. I can't see Barry John Keane's played all his games, and I don't care. Barry John Keane is a super sub, and he's not going to be a starter.
He's the type of player that comes in and makes a real impact. So he is. Going back to your point, Conan, earlier on, you know, about Kerry preparing for the future. Regardless of what we think of Kerry, they're going to be in 5 or 6 All Ireland finals every decade anyway. So they are, you know, because they just are. They be there, and they know how to get there. So, you know,
well, the Super 8s might change that a little bit, because the accusation was always that they'll be in a Munster final, so they'd only really have one qualifier game, even if they lost the Munster final to get into the quarter finals.
Based on tradition, based on history, you know, you expect Kerry to be competing at that level, you know, consistently regardless, because they always have quality players coming through. And whether they're going to be as good as Kerry teams gone in years gone by remains to be seen, but I have no doubt in my mind, in the next 30 years, Kerry will compete in at least half of those All-Ireland finals.
Ah yeah, no, there's no doubt. A big change so far, and whether it's by accident or design, I'd say more by design, is their half forward line. So, like, I mean, they don't have the half forward line now that is going to be dropping back and doing defensive work. That's not their strength. Now, Micheál Burns will cover a lot of ground, but he's always back up trying to trouble the scoreboard. Sean O'Shea, they finally have a centre forward. So instead of messing around with Johnny Buckley, Paul Murphy, all these fellas a centre forward, which weren't centre forwards, and Keane O'Sullivan can just go, look, you go on, I'm not concerned about you, I'm just going to drop off. He can't drop off Sean O'Shea. So that's a huge thing that we need to look out for at the weekend, because I know we don't draw conclusions from the league and we keep saying it and keep saying it, but that's one battle that we will see later on in the year if these two teams meet each other. Sean O'Shea versus Keane O'Sullivan, and how Keane O'Sullivan deals with him, and who's the lad that drops off then. And if Micheál Burns is there and Stephen O'Brien is there, they're two speedster, can the Johnny Coopers and the James McCarthys and the Lowndes and whoever's playing, because Johnny Small can they drop off two of them? I don't know if they can, because these lads trouble the scoreboard. So who's going to cover the Kerry or the Dublin full back line?
Yeah.
And I think that's what Kerry are building towards. There's six orthodox forwards and not allow Dublin that sweeper.
Yeah, I think you're right. And like those three half forwards, what they do is they put the shits up the half backs where they won't want to go forward as much anymore. Like, you think you said it before, but you'd much rather, like, you'd rather mark a Johnny Buckley, as much respect as I have for him, but if he's going to just take off into the middle, it's great when you're a half back.
It's fine. Yeah,
and space opens up and you've got a bit of time. Yeah. But when Stephen O'Brien's coming on at you then with the next play, and
he has
Burns,
to be man marked. Yeah.
Stephen O'Brien has one thing in his mind most times when he gets the ball, and that's to go direct.
Yeah.
And that's what a defender doesn't want to see, you know.
Yeah.
And the player,
but
he's powerfully strong as well. He's able to take a man on. So, you know, if he can cause Dublin problems early on, you know, Dublin will have to probably re-look at their game plan.
Is this to the detriment of the Kerry defence, though? Because you had Donica Walsh and you had Johnny Buckley, and they would drop back and, you know, be in there and help out. Is this new attack in half forward line, which I think is designed for the Dublin half back line to keep them honest, is this ruining the Kerry defence? Or do they need David Moran badly as that general that can maybe do that job? Like, I mean, that could be the whole solution
here. Isn't he?
Huge player. Like, I mean, it's their best player by a mile, and best all-round player. And even Donaghy, like, I mean, Donaghy in there, and like, he's got that physical presence, he's a winner, and like, I mean, he could be a great foil for Clifford. Geaney's not having the best one. Geaney definitely starts, there's no doubt about that, but maybe stagger them in a line, or, you know, do something different with them. But like, I mean, Donny, they're missing leaders, their issues in the defence is still there. They need to find that man that can shore that up.
But barring last year's National League final, where Kerry did get the upper hand on Dublin, you know, they haven't really come close to beating Dublin in the last couple of years by playing players back and by covering you know, their defence as well. So maybe we'll never know whether this works or not until we actually see it take place and see it happen. And this Sunday could be a prime opportunity for Fitzmaurice to maybe try something different against Dublin and see if his team, you know, respond well to it.
Yeah, it will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see who Dublin put even on Clifford, because like I said, some of these are going to be battles we're going to see for years.
I'd say Philly McMahon will
be
the
way. Do you think so? Philly was dropped for the last day. Philly could be on thin ice in there, because he was awful against Donegal and he looked like he wasn't interested. He was told to do a man marking job. And I think Philly gets the hump when he's asked to do the man marking job, because Philly likes, he's a free spirit on the field. And I thought Philly's attitude, just looking from the outside, I thought his body language didn't look like he wanted to do that man marking job.
I think some players really thrive on being handed the responsibility of man marking the player, and some man markers who perform really well at doing their duty, you know, really put their forward and their opponent, direct opponent, on the back foot by attacking. And Philly McMahon, I think, does that extremely well. So, you know, if he was given the responsibility of marking David Clifford at the weekend, you know, he would be saying, right, as often and as much as possible that I can put David Clifford on the back foot and try to see if he tracks me back, I will do that. But, you know, first and foremost, my primary responsibility is to stop him scoring.
And you probably need Fitzsimons for Geaney anyway, wouldn't you?
Yeah, probably, because he's the one in the full back line that has a bit of size.
Johnny Cooper could be another one. I know he's been playing further out the field, but he could be another player that might drop back as well. Like, but Johnny Cooper has a wee nasty streak in him as well that can get under the skin of the likes of David Clifford. And we've seen in a few of the earlier games with David Clifford, you know, there has been some teams that have tried to target him already.
It must have been the Monday then that we were saying that Johnny Cooper is the Killian O'Connor of the backs at the moment. Killian O'Connor is the Johnny Cooper. We just wanted a day when they actually marked each other and they could really torment each other. But that, like, I mean, it is going to be interesting. And even another one, Jack Barry versus Fenton, like, they paired off the last time. That's another one we're going to see for years. Like, I mean, there's loads of matchups like this. Like, I'd say Kieran Kilkenny could probably play in the full forward line, because we see sometimes Kilkenny going into the full forward line because he might slow things up a little bit, and Dublin don't want to slow anything up against Kerry, because there are one-on-one situations, which Dublin, again, they're not really used to this stuff. So it's going to be really interesting to see. I'd say Dublin are splitting their training sessions now between every two in-house match is a defensive in-house match, and every one in three is a 15 on 15 game, because they have to practice that as well.
Do they need to practice a defensive thing anymore? Looks like they're well past it.
Yeah, maybe just to hone it.
Just do a wee refresher every month.
I think Dublin just turn up the train and do their own thing. Don't care too much about their opponents. You know, they have to do the research and work, whatever. But you know, the reality is they're the best team in the country, and it's up to other teams to catch up with them and try to, you know, analyse their game plan more than anything else. So Dublin just have outsmarted quite a few teams over the past few years.
What about the kickouts? I know you got all excited 2 years ago, Willie, when Kerry did like to push the extra men up. It's sort of a Dublin tactic now.
Dublin have taken that tactic. Yeah.
So how are Kerry? I know we always talk about Cluxton's kickouts, but what are Kerry going to do there without Moran as well to try and win that primary ball?
Well, they'll just be manning. They'll be manning up. And Kerry, in fairness to them, they have been to the forefront of this big press. They've been innovative with what they've been doing. I think they were first team to do the zonal, then they're first team to actually commit defenders into the area to completely block up all the zones. So all that stuff is really, really interesting. There's no doubt about that. I think the kick out going outside the 45 helps Kerry, there's no doubt, in that zonal kind of thing. And I think maybe the mark with the mark might help that as well, you know. So I think that's interesting. But I don't think Kerry will be pulling out any kind of new tactics for Cluxton's kickouts at the weekend. They'll be saving that. You know, we only saw that one, committing the defenders up in that All Ireland semi final. You know, that's something that anything new, you're absolutely going to be. There will be an element of shadow boxing at the weekend with stuff like that. Now, the half forward line is the one that really interests me. When you look at maybe 2 years ago, Donica Walsh, Johnny Buckley, and Paul Murphy was the Kerry half forward line. They're three really defensively minded players.
Paul Murphy's back in defence now anyway.
He's back in defence, and then you have Micheál Burns, Sean O'Shea and Stephen O'Brien. That's going to be really interesting. I think we can actually do a bit of analysis. I don't think we've really done analysis too much on a Monday, but we can actually maybe do a little bit of analysis on what to expect for the summer out of that game. I think it's going to be a proper kind of, not quite a championship level, but I always remember playing with Laois. The last two league games was the two league games that you had settled on your starting team, and that's who played the last two league games. If you were in for the last two league games, you were I'm in chance. The mix.
Well, there's always one surprise there.
There might be, but mostly if you the first three league games, people aren't too concerned. Then there's two more, and then the last two. You need to be on the team for the last two, because if you perform well in that last two, you're starting to shape your championship team. So we can start maybe taking these ones a little bit more seriously. Please tell me we're into the last two. We are into the last. There's three left. Now we have to wait for the following.
At the same time as Dublin against Kerry, and they will be putting out pretty strong teams.
They will. I want to ask you about Armagh, Stevie, because we haven't spoken about them in a while. And you're our Armagh correspondent, and Ethan Rafferty is just kind of blown the house down with this. It's beyond belief, and he's even playing Grimley in there beside him against Westmeath. Grimley scored 2 against Westmeath, Rafferty 6 against Longford. Rafferty scored 1-4 out of 1-11. This is a masterstroke by McGeaney.
Well, Ethan Rafferty has been in the mix for the last couple of seasons. Last year he didn't start. He came into a few games, made an impact. He's a huge man. He's
a midfielder, though, right? He's not been a forward, has he?
He has. No, he's played forward.
Has he?
In
full
the past,
forward.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, so I don't think it's any coincidence that Kieran has looked quite heavily at putting him and Andrew Murnan in a twin full forward line, because the two of them are 6'4", 6'5", both can play football, high or low balls. And the only unfortunate thing is Andrew Murnan came off at half time of the last game with a slight injury, so a lot of the responsibility will probably fall on Ethan now for winning primary possession in that full forward line. But listen,
are they launching it in? Is this back to Meath 99 kind of thing? Get it in long and early?
What, from the couple of games that I've been at, they've actually changed it. It's not just always one route, one delivery. So it's not. They are putting the nice diagonal balls in that I used to love playing on there. But they are also threading good ball in. But I spoke about this a few weeks ago. Their wing half forwards are creating a lot of space for ball to be played into the full forward line, and they're coming off the shoulder at the right time as well. So by creating space, they're playing wide, and that allows Armagh to run the ball, that allows Armagh to put long delivery in, and it also allows Armagh to thread nice ball into the likes of Andrew Murn and Ethan Rafferty. So they are mixing their game up. It's not just one dimensional game plan that they're sticking with. They are mixing their game up, and they've got while they've won 4 out of 4, their last two performances haven't been up to the standards and the levels that they should be at. So, you know, for Armagh to continue in the winning vein of form that they're in, they need to up the ante now, because they are coming up against Derry. Derry haven't had a great league campaign, we know that, but it's Armagh against Derry. It's an Ulster rivalry match, and it's going to be tough. It's, you know, albeit it's in the Athletic Grounds, and Armagh have been decent there over the last couple of years.
You're not going to tip Derry now, like?
No, I'm not going to tip Derry, but Derry can back, remember that game.
Yeah, well, you know. 1-8 to low score down
yeah.
door.
Yeah, but I'm not going to tip anyone in this particular game.
I'd tip Armagh.
the experiment of Charlie Vernon at fullback is gone now so far this year. He's into midfield. He's a fullback. I don't think he's stuck with that for too long. I think.
But Charlie adds, pushing Charlie out the field, you know, his experience there, you know, with such a young Armagh team is so valuable around that middle sector of the park. But Armagh have found a new fullback in Aaron McKay. You know, we're looking at a player here who's won a Sigurdsson medal playing for St Mary's last year, fullback. I had him at under 21 level, and I wouldn't have put him anywhere near defence. I wouldn't have seen him as a defender, believe it or not. He would have been a midfielder or further up the field. But obviously, Paddy Talley seen something in him as a defender. Kieran McGeaney sees something in him as a defender. And the more games I see him playing fullback, the more, you know, assurance that I get in him, because he is a good, tough competitor, and he has made that position his own for Armagh at the minute, as has the likes of Paddy Burns, a new player playing in cornerback as well. Very strong, powerful player who breaks out, remind you almost of a Philly McMahon, a powerful player, well built, that drives out at speed and supports his players as much as he possibly can as well. So their defence has changed, their attack has somewhat changed as well, but
Farker's gone centre forward. He was wing back, wasn't he, last year?
He's gone from centre forward to wing half forward.
Right.
So he has, and he's moved further up the field. But Farker, you know, he's an experienced player at this stage, but he's a smart player. I know he can have his moments of madness as well, but he is a smart player, and he's one of those players that are very important for Armagh to play the smart type of football that they have played in the first couple of games.
Well, I was going to ask, where's McParland? Because he was very...
Gavin McParland hasn't been playing. He actually picked up a hamstring injury,
must be injured.
Yeah,
he's such a good ball winner and stuff. Like, really
exceptionally good ball winner, yeah. He's very strong. I'm not 100% sure if we'll ever see Gavin McParland as an out-and-out starter. While he started a number of championship games last year, I don't think he's going to consistently be a starter.
Because he was outstanding. Yeah. He must have been nominated for an All-Star. He was, because he was outstanding off the... Like, I mean, he kicked points in a lot of that run. O'Shea's cousin that you talked up and we haven't seen
O'Shea's
since
nephew. He's opted out of the squad this year himself.
Oh, he's out,
yeah, and his reasons for opting out of the squad is overload.
Really?
So there was a newspaper article maybe about 6 weeks ago that he opted out because he didn't want to be worked. He didn't want to go through the demands of it playing at county football at such a young age, and that's fair enough. I think he's going to concentrate most of his efforts this year on playing across McGlenn.
Right, that's interesting. And are across McGlenn lads committed? I don't see too much of a sprinkle of them across.
Well, you've got Paul Hughes.
He's not
played,
there, is he?
He is. He's playing cornerback in almost every game. And you've got James Morgan. He didn't play
against Longford or Westmead, Hughes.
Are you sure about that? I think he has, maybe.
No, Burns, Mackay and Donaghy were the full back line.
Oh, Brent Donaghy played the last day of the tour, yes. Well, Hughes is in. He's there, so he is, yeah. There's no doubt that James Morgan's going to be part of the squad when he comes back from travelling. He isn't Australia at the minute.
They're two definite starters, aren't they?
You would imagine so. But given the way the likes of Patrick Burns is playing, Aaron McKay is playing, their defence in overall is playing at the minute, it won't be an easy walk back into the team for James Morgan, because, you know, he will have a lot of proving to do to the likes of Kieran and Jim McCarty as well. You know, he's made a massive impact in terms of being involved in the backroom team as well. A good experienced manager, but bringing that type of management experience along the sideline and being another, I suppose, opinion and voice to his opinion beside Kieran as well is great to have as well.
I think he deserves a lot of credit, McGeaney, to be sitting on four wins, because I don't think, like, Westmead and Longford and these teams are good teams, and there's been a big turnover in Armagh, and they've lost like some important players, and even panel members aren't around there, and for him to be sitting at the top with four wins, and after changing things around and having to deal with that, like, I mean, I think this is one of the most impressive kind of years so far of his time with Armagh.
Yeah, but it doesn't surprise me. There's quite a few of the players playing now, playing regularly for the senior team, that come through the under 21 ranks, that I've seen firsthand how good of players that they are.
Right.
And, you know, Kieran is now putting them into the team more consistently. They're quality players. Armagh have quality players. A lot of counties have quality players, but it's about getting the right blend, the right mix, and the players who really want to play county football into the team. And Armagh have a group of players now that really want to play for Kieran McGeaney, really want to play for Armagh, and really go out and perform as a team. And that's very important for any county to do well. And I would say in the last couple of games against Offaly, yes, they got the result, but the performance wasn't the best. And against Longford, they got the result. The performance certainly wasn't the best, but it's the bond and the togetherness that maybe got them through those games.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right, lads, that's all we've time for. There's loads of good games at the weekend. Toronto, Donegal, Big Ulster match. Cavan Down in Division 2 is going to be another kind of one. Galway, Roscommon, or Galway and Monaghan is kind of a top of the table. Well, two teams on the upper kind of end of the table. Kildare and Mayo, really big one. In Division 2 we have Clare and Roscommon, which is a big one. We talked to Colm Collins already. Meath Cork, it's two teams that are not going well in Division 2. Like, there's an awful lot of pressure there. In Parktelton, Meath obviously do well at home, not so well when they're away. Westmeath, Fermanagh is the big one in Division 3. You know, their two teams going really well. And Division 4, all the three big ones, the promotion favourites, have all avoided each other this week. Again, Leash are away in London, which would be a lovely little trip to get. One of the perks of being in Division 4 is getting that London away, lads. Ryslip, nice win. I don't want to talk too soon. Nice win. Stay over the night, lads. We'll get a flight home the next day. A few pints in London. We bonding. Ticking all the boxes, this is. No recovery. Bonding. Didn't take the recovery box, but we're ticking everything else.
Bonding is right. We played London in London in 2002 in the league.
Did you, yeah? How did you manage that?
I don't know. I can't remember. I think we were playing Division 2, so they were obviously playing Division 2 as well. You beat us in the semi-final.
Was there, maybe there was a 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B or something, and they crossed over? Yeah.
It might have been, because I remember travelling over to London that particular year, and then we went to the semi-final. You beat us in Longford.
Right. Okay, maybe. And sure, London was James Horan's watershed moment too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That, nearly beaten against,
right,
London.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
makes
did really
a man
well
of you over in London.
That's not easy. Was the travel involved, you know, getting your head straight? Anyways, listen, we'll talk to you on Monday with a review show. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.